brought to you by On Service Oriented Architecture, part of the On Podcast Network at Inform IT.
Hi, I'm Kevin Davis. Thanks for tuning in to our On SOA podcast. Today, I'm talking with Andre Tost, co-author of the book Web Service Contract Design and Versioning for SOA. Andre's with the SOA technology team in the IBM software group. We're going to be talking today about namespaces in XML schema design. Andre, thanks for talking to us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So the concept of a namespace is, I think, fairly basic and straightforward one. Let's have you take us through how you define a namespace.
Okay. I take a step further back into XML. XML is made up of a pretty small set of core pieces. So let me mention elements and attributes, for example, that allow us to describe certain models. On top of that, we have a content model that allows elements to be in other elements. So in other words, I can have the concept of an address, and I can define that within an address I have a street, I have a city name, and a zip code, for example. So now you could assume that that's sufficient to say I can describe the data elements I want to work with, and with this concept of elements and attributes. And what happens is that we add namespaces to this to allow giving further structure and classification to the elements that we're defining. So I can group them, I can associate them with a certain, and that's where the name namespace comes from, I can associate them with a certain space, and I can also make sure that things that have been called the same name from different parties don't end up being confused with each other.
So XML then is composable. You can sort of nest things. Do namespaces help you clarify that nesting? How do namespaces help with that?
Right. And so in the XML space, I usually compose, like you said, compose things together that come from different sources. And there again, like I said before, namespaces allow me to classify and structure the elements within my composition, if you will. And again, if I have XML fragments that come from different independent sources, I can avoid for these to be confused by using the same name. So if I have, you know, common core elements in the IT world, like customers or orders or, like I said, addresses, those may come from different sources, may be defined in a similar but different way. And by adding a namespace qualification to them, I can basically make sure they don't get confused with each other. And by reading documents like that, I can tell immediately where an element belongs and how it's been classified.
So if you're going to be grouping elements logically, what constitutes a logical grouping for within a namespace? I mean, is it something where you put all of your business entities in a single namespace, or do you create a namespace per business entity and all its associated attributes? Sort of what granularity do namespaces play at?
That's a very good question, because there's also not necessarily a simple answer for this. At what level of granularity I define namespaces depends on the environment that I'm in. But, I mean, first of all, I could say not every business entity gets its own namespace, and I would also not give all my business entities in my environment the same namespace. So in that respect, you know, this is the extreme solutions are not right, and it's somewhere, the answer is somewhere in the middle. So, and it's somewhat of an art, if you will, to find the appropriate grouping. The hierarchy that usually namespace names follow help me with that, and we'll get to that in a minute. But let me just say that a typical grouping that you may find is along the lines of a particular solution or a particular service. It's very common that people put all the entities and message definitions and interface definitions for one particular business service into the same namespace, or you may want to group along the lines of certain business domains. So if we're strictly talking about data modeling, then my enterprise data model will give me some structure that can also guide me in how I select namespaces in there. There's no technical limit to say, you know, you cannot have more than 20 things in a namespace, And so it's more of a design element or an architectural element that's not necessarily bound by any technical restriction.
So how is a namespace functionally specified, and what's the mechanism to specify a namespace?
Yeah, and this is what I mentioned earlier, and I mentioned hierarchy. So first of all, a namespace has a name, and that name is basically fundamentally a string. There's no meaning or logic to it. It's just a name, no more, no less. So there are certain conventions that people use in how they define their namespaces, and most common, you will find that namespaces are named after URLs. So you will typically see something that starts with http://, then the name of the company, for example, or the organization that owns this namespace, and then some other hierarchical structure. So it looks a lot like a URL, and that can be very helpful. So first of all, the domain name that you use after the http://, will most likely be unique to your own organization. So there again, we have this notion that we avoid confusion, and we can immediately tell, well, this belongs to, you know, mycompany.com, and that's where this element has been defined. On top of that, I can then follow a hierarchical structure. I can, for example, distinguish between entities that live in different business domains within my enterprise, or I can distinguish between, say, services and the entities that are used within those services, just to have a further means of classification there. I can do that by simply adding more slashes and after my URL, and then basically, you know, build a tree of namespace names from that. But what's really important to keep in mind is that the XML processing engine puts no meaning into this. It's still just a string. So the fact that we're using the convention of using URLs doesn't really mean anything in terms of how this is being processed at runtime or how an XML document is being parsed. It's just a logical helper that enables us, if you will, to, like I said, build a hierarchical namespace kind of environment.
Right. And so for those of us who've seen, you know, a lot of XML documents, and there's usually a namespace definition, the document tells you what a given namespace corresponds to. It's usually some sort of abbreviation of the namespace that then is prefixed onto all the elements, you know, with a colon, right? So is that right, that string just used by the XML processor to identify all of the things that it's used as an internal tag?
Right. And so what you usually find is, like I said, the namespace name is typically represented by a string. If it's a URL, that can get rather long, and it would be quite tedious to add this to every element in my document. So there's a mechanism to provide a shortcut, and we call that the namespace prefix. So instead of putting the full namespace name in front of every element, we can just use the prefix. And usually that's intended to be pretty short, just to also reduce the size of the overall XML fragment and the XML document, if you will. So as far as the processing goes, then it's really confined to only the part of the XML that it's defined for. So any XML parser will find a definition for a certain prefix associated with the namespace, and will then internally replace that prefix with the namespace when processing all the elements. So in that respect, the prefix has no meaning outside of the object hierarchy in XML that it's been defined for. It's really just an abbreviation, nothing more.
Right. And so to me, that says also that if I have two different instances of an XML document, I can use the same namespace in both of them, because it's really just a flag. There's no document that defines a namespace and everything in it.
That's correct. And there's further shortcuts even. We have this notion of a default namespace, which basically says every element that sits within this scope will be of the following namespace, and I can even skip the prefix definition because I've just defined it once for all the elements in there. That's just another convenience mechanism, if you will, to make my documents shorter and make them more readable.
So if the XML prefix isn't specified, it's part of the default namespace. Now, is there a way to, I know that we've talked a little bit about XML schema in the past in the series, and we talked about being able to include schemas within schemas. Can you do the same thing with namespaces? Is there a concept of sub-namespacing?
I wouldn't necessarily call it that. I would just say that each element within an XML fragment can be associated with a namespace. I can define that in schema, and I can define, for example, that all the children of a particular element belong to the same namespace as that parent element. I wouldn't call that a sub-namespace, though, because it's really, as far as that association goes, I define that for each element individually. So I can mix and match. I can have a particular namespace, if you will, sprinkled all over an XML fragment with elements at all levels of the tree, if you will, belonging to the same namespace. So there's not really this concept of nesting in there. I can just mix and match as I see fit.
Because when you come down to it, it's still just going to be a string to the processor, and a string is a string.
Correct.
Gotcha. So one of the things that we were talking a little bit about the divisions of your namespace into, so how you do deal with granularity, and there's obviously going to be a lot of trade-offs there, but how do you decide what the best breakup is? I know you said something about having it be associated with a particular service or associated with a particular business domain. Those could cross each other quite orthogonally, right?
That's correct, and that's why we have to keep in mind that a namespace and the hierarchy I can build with using a URL for a namespace name is pretty much a two-dimensional thing. So in other words, if I have several types of classification that I want to use for my XML documents, I have to basically decide which kind of approach I take for namespaces. I can't have multiples. The only thing I could do, for example, is to say, well, I'm going to use this notion of hierarchy by saying immediately after, you know, http://, my company name, / and then I could list all my different business domains, and I could say order management, and then / and that's where I could add, you know, names for all the business services that I have within order management. So in that respect, if I can associate my services with a certain line of business, I can try to reflect that in my hierarchy that I'm using. But if I then want to have a different, an additional way of differentiating between things that doesn't fit into this hierarchy, there's no way to add yet another dimension to this. And we also have to be careful that we don't make these namespace names too long and too fine-grained, because then, it becomes unmanageable and pretty unreadable at the same time. So I think it's important that at the beginning of a project and as part of the design work, that a common, and this should be consistent across the entire enterprise, of course, that a common approach towards namespace names is chosen and documented, and basically becomes one of the in-house conventions for how to name things.
So you're with IBM, and you have probably some of the biggest customers in the world from a consulting point of view. To try to enforce a namespace convention across some of your biggest customers, how is that accomplished?
And that's is a challenge, just like you pointed out, because it all goes into this big space of governance and how do I ensure certain consistency in my design and in my architecture. So sometimes we cannot enforce this across an entire enterprise, especially if it's big and very distributed. But I can maybe try to enforce it at least within a certain organization. But to me, it's all part of how do you, you know, ensure consistency in design, in naming conventions in general. Namespaces are just one part of that. You know, how do I name components? How do I name the data entities that I work with? How are they being reused, for example? If I'm building a solution that never ever is going to be reused anywhere else, then obviously that gives me bigger flexibility in how I want to name things, because it's not really affecting anybody else. But I think this is all part of the overall governance of how I'm developing IT solutions.
So I guess I'm also a little bit looking for a recommendation. If you have such a large organization, and you said one of the things you can do for your namespace is obviously make it company specific, because usually that's your generic domain name. But then you start getting to add slashes. Do you then go, you know, do you start with schemas? Do you start with data elements? Do you start by services? Or, you know, in a company so big, you probably have to start with business units, right?
Yeah, that's typically what happens. It depends on the approach. What I've seen is that our global services arm, for example, is using an approach that's called component business modeling. It's trying to take an enterprise and divide it up into its basic core components, regardless of organization. And what I end up with is a component map that lists all the different areas of business that form my enterprise. If we have this available, it's basically a way of structuring the things you do as a company along functional lines. And if I have something like that, that's very good guidance for how I'm going to pick my namespaces, because it should be in line with how I've divided up the things I do, basically. In other cases, we do, I call this good old enterprise architecture work. We try to do an assessment of what's there. What are the existing applications and what are the domains that they belong to? That includes data as well as applications or even services if they exist. And I basically, like I said, have to make an assessment of that, and I have to document that, get agreement of this within the enterprise architecture team, if there is one, and basically use that as a first step to also defining namespaces. And so it becomes a certain way of using enterprise architecture as a driving element to define namespaces, and not the other way around. I should not use the namespace guidelines that I come up with as a way of defining what my enterprise architecture should look like.
Right. The namespaces then become sort of a, you know, your taxonomy documentation of how you've decomposed your systems, not a driver to that. Just really more of a nod to how the systems have been decomposed and along which lines.
Exactly.
So that's all well and good for having version 1.0. How does the namespaces, how does that mix with versioning for your schemas? You know, obviously, in your first version of something, it's easy. You know, you don't have any version numbers. You just define your customer namespace, let's say. What happens when you have to add a bunch of fields to the customer namespace and you have to change the definitions of all these entities?
Right. So if I start changing things in my environment, then usually the way this is done is that I have some kind of source code control management system that allows me to tag versions on top of artifacts that are being stored in there. So if I then want to retrieve an element, and the same goes for Java code, for example, or other pieces, or you know, plain relational models, I go in and I can see, oh, I have a version 1.0, and I have a version 1.1, and I have a version 2.0, and I can retrieve them accordingly. What we do here now is what we can use namespaces for is the idea of XML as a self-describing language, if you will. So what happens is I can add the version number to the document itself, so that if I look at any piece of either XML schema or XML itself as a document, I can already see what version it is. And since I associate all the elements within XML with a certain namespace, I can use that to my advantage and just add the version number on top of that. So if I were just at the very end of each namespace name, I put the version number, then wherever this may go and wherever this may have come from, if anybody gives me a piece of XML, I can look at it and immediately tell what version of this certain entity or the certain schema has been used for this. So we're just taking advantage of the fact that we have a classifying entity within XML, and we're just adding on top of that to add version information.
Interesting.
And that's just a convention that we usually recommend with all the customers that we work with, because it also then, as another example, if you do logging and auditing and tracing of messages, if you're doing troubleshooting, by just plainly looking at a fragment of XML, you can immediately tell, for example, if you have a versioning issue between a service consumer and a service provider.
doesn't that sort of mix metadata into your data?
It does, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like I said, this was all in the spirit of XML being a somewhat self-describing kind of thing. So if I can add metadata and let it flow along with my fragments, that makes them more independent. That means I don't have to go back into my, like I said, my source control system and see where a piece of information came from and so forth. And so I have this notion of namespaces already. I'm just taking additional advantage of it. And I see nothing wrong with that, really.
So potentially a runtime environment might be able to parse that information and use it dynamically as opposed to having to sort of bind them at compile time.
Of course.
Excellent. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in. Andre Tost is with the SOA technology team in the IBM Software Group and is co-author of Web Service Contract Design and Versioning for SOA, a recent entry in Thomas Earle's Service-Oriented Computing series. Andre, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
This episode was brought to you by On Service-Oriented Architecture, part of the On Podcast Network at Inform IT. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast at iTunes or check us out at informit.com/onsoa.